As you well know, the novel coronavirus and COVID-19 should not be the first sign that something is wrong with this world. Now, don't get me wrong, we live on a beautiful planet. It's full of awesome signs that we have a good and gracious creator, but it's corruptible, and it has been corrupted. Human corruption and dark spiritual forces have torn a gash in a beautiful creation. This also isn't the first time, as you know, that humanity has suffered a plague. We've imagined that because we are technologically advanced, we don't have to suffer these kinds of problems. In fact, because our world is so networked, this plague has spread further than it would have in darker days. You know, our common spiritual enemy rebelled and drew our first ancestors away from trusting God's heart and plan. It was there in the garden, you know the story, the Garden of Eden, where Adam and Eve said, "Not your will, but mine be done." Not what you want, but mine be done. But in that same garden, full of God's provision and God's presence, the very intersection of heaven and earth, God's space and our space, there was a promise made to Adam and Eve that the seed of a woman, the seed of the woman, would do battle. This human would do battle again with dark forces, would do battle with the serpent, the spiritual enemy. And the promise was that though this promised human would be bitten, this dark power would be destroyed. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with the biblical story that much, but it is full of longing and expectation. Sometimes we look to the Old Testament, look to these stories for heroes, but each time we see one of these figures, we think, is this going to be the human that's going to be able to withstand the test, the temptation, and will do what is right? We'll say, not my will, but yours be done. But would-be hero after would-be hero come and go, and the disappointment is immense. Again, we hear over and over and over, not your will, but mine be done. Maybe you know that echo in your own heart. Even the best give in and rebel against the Creator God, who is full of beauty and full of justice. Yahweh, that's God's covenant name that he gave to his people. He keeps making and keeping his promises, though. Isn't that amazing? The other nations went their way. All the other nations went away serving their gods. In fact, the Bible used language as that God divorced them and sent them packing. And they go and explore the world and worship these other gods through idolatry. But God took one man, made him his possession, his inheritance, his portion, took Abraham, and gave him a promise that through Abraham, all those families would be blessed and brought back in. It's an amazing promise that through one person, he didn't really give up on all them. He made a plan to go get those nations back. Through Abraham, all families on earth would be blessed. And he later called that family, many of you know the Exodus story, out of Egyptian slavery, right? And to become his special people. And they became a nation called Israel. So, you may have heard of King David. He was one of the kings of Israel who never bowed his knee to these other dark powers, never worshipped at their altars, never said, "You gotta help me." He kept his eyes on Yahweh the whole time. He was deeply flawed, but he never stopped worshipping Yahweh. Okay, so just a quick show of hands from the viewers at home. I'll look around. How many of you are deeply flawed? Raise your hand. There's some cracks that run really deep through you, right? Okay, just checking. Just checking. So this is just like David. But then David had a promise that someone on his throne would always be in power and running God's kingdom. There were new promises about the seed, this human one, who would come and defeat evil. Well, that's what we need. Now, he's seen as a root, not just the seed, but the root and a spring, a shoot that comes up out of David. a descendant of David. But then every single son of David turned out to be just as disappointing as any of these other would-be heroes. In fact, it looked like the whole project was over, because the kingdom of Israel, you know, God's plan to bless all nations, was destroyed, exiled, sent away. And I think everybody there thought, this is over, this is over. But God kept keeping his promises, and he would tell them, oh, you need to believe, you need to believe. Believe that I know what I'm doing. And he would just continue to use his prophets to hold out hope for them. More and more of their would-be heroes kept saying, not your will, but mine be done. Of course, there was a remnant. Maybe you feel like that today, the remnant, the few, waiting for God to fulfill his promise. Okay, just another show of hands for you at home. How many of you feel like you are waiting for God to fulfill his promises? You just have this hope and expectation that, God, do what you said you're going to do. Well, these prophets, these ones who would come and speak for God, held out hope that Yahweh was coming to put things right, to right the wrongs, to straighten what has become crooked, to repair and rebuild what has been torn down. Yahweh was making these claims. I've been reading them this week, that I'm going to come and be king again in Israel, to restore Israel, to bring justice. I think we know what that means, but it's making things right again. You know, I have to do that every once in a while, and as a dad, encouraging my kids, hey, I need you to make that right. And I've got to let them be a little bit creative on how that happens. They don't all just hug and make up, but you need to go make that right and work that. That's justice, making things right again at last. And this is what God is planning to do, to get this original project back on track. So, by the time Jesus was born, and Christmas, right? Beautiful. Beautiful time, baby Jesus. But by the time Jesus was born, there were many who claimed that they were this royal seed, right? This seed of a woman that was a root then of David that sprung up, and many claimed that they were that person. They were appointed for this task. They would actually use the word anointed. That was they used oil to anoint, saying they were anointed to the task. And from the word it comes from the Hebrew, but it's Messiah, an anointed one, the one specially assigned for this task. Now in Greek, it came out Christos, and so we use Christ, the Christ. And so just another tip for viewers at home, Jesus's last name wasn't Christ. He wasn't born to Joseph Christ and Mary Christ. He is the Christ, meaning that's a title. He is the expected royal Messiah figure who would come and set things all aright. But many others during that time had said they were that person. They came as a Christ to lead a revolution, to start the kingdom of God. They would go out and relaunch the Exodus. They would try to bring Israel back and get God's kingdom to start again, and to jumpstart his promises about this new created order. There are some deep and beautiful promises about how God is going to reshape. You know, beauty in our world has been trampled and justice has been denied, but God is going to come back and reshape the world in a new created order, the new creation. So as Jesus begins to walk and talk and preach and love and heal and listen and care for people, he lived and taught like something new was happening for the world, and that God was becoming king again among his people. So to hear him speak, and maybe you've read some of his words, you've read in the Gospels, to hear him speak was like listening in on heaven's plans to recreate the world. He was calling people to be part of this new garden, this new kingdom. His kingdom was like a seed planted. I don't know if you remember some of Jesus' parables. They're all about this gardens growing and seeds planted and producing all this stuff. His kingdom was like a seed planted, taking root and then growing to fill the whole world. That's what it was like to listen to him. To watch him work, oh, I would give anything to watch him at work like that, was to watch the very hand of God as he reached across the social distancing. He would actually touch infectious people. And to experience his touch was the most sought-after treasure in the known world. To say he was precious, unique, wonderful, is the least we could say about him. He upheld justice for the poor and the marginalized. He was one. Near the end of his life, he literally declared war on injustice and the powers of darkness. He revealed that he was in fact God, the creator and sustainer of all things. One of his disciples, one of his close followers, John, taught that God had been revealed in Jesus. The Word became human and made his home among us. He was full of unfailing love and faithfulness. And we have seen his glory, the glory of the Father's one and only Son. John testified about him when he shouted to the crowds, "This is the one I was talking about when I said someone is coming after me who is far greater than I am, for he existed long before me. From his abundance, we have all received one gracious blessing after another. For the law was given through Moses," that's the Exodus generation, "but God's unfailing love and faithfulness came through Jesus Christ." Then he says this, "No one has ever seen God, but the unique one who is himself God is near to the Father's heart. He has revealed God to us." Truth is, God is in his essence, in his nature, is invisible. No one has seen God. You want a manifestation of God? You want God to show up? That's our Christmas story. You want God to care? That's our Passion Week. That's our story of this week. You want God to be victorious over evil? That's the Resurrection Sunday. God has made himself known in Jesus. No one has ever seen God, but the unique one who is himself is God, is near to the Father's heart. He has revealed God to us. So if you were looking... Just hunting around for the center of beauty and justice and love and mercy. If you're looking for the intersection of heaven and earth, and so many of us are, longing for a new world, a new age. We're looking for a time when we could just all live in harmony and no more sickness, no more disease. And we think that this technological age is going to bring it about. No. God is going to bring it about. If you're looking for this intersection of heaven and earth, bliss, paradise, garden, you'll find it in Jesus. His kingdom is like the Garden of Eden with his presence and his provision. The creator and sustainer of everything walking and talking among us. That was Jesus. Such a treasure. This week, about 2,000 years ago, we find Jesus in another garden. This is the garden with the final test. With the battle won for us. He is the seed who passes the test. Listen to his words. He says, "My Father, if it's possible, may this cup be taken from me, yet not as I will, but as you will." This cup is a cup of where you drink to the dregs the built-up need for punishment. Israel was at the point where they needed to drink God's judgment. They had ignored him too long. The world needed to drink judgment because they were way far over the boundaries of justice. And so here Jesus is saying, "I will take the cup for all of you." He says, if possible, may this cup be taken from me, yet not as I will, but as you will. Whoa. Then he comes back to talk to his disciples. "Hey, pray with me. Don't you know this is like the hardest thing I've ever had to do? This is the big test." And he went away the second time and prayed, "My Father, if it's not possible for this cup to be taken away, unless I drink it, may your will be done." Here we have one saying, "Not my will, but yours be done." Jesus' words and his actions show that he passes the test. Instead of choosing what he wants, he tells the Father, "Not what I want, but what you want." And he also prays that the disciples would be delivered from this test. The own prayer that he taught his disciples, "Lead us not into temptation. Don't lead us into the test, but deliver us from evil." and as the new Adam, the new man in the garden, the new seed of the woman, the new representative of humanity, Jesus passes the test. He's the human we failed to be, and he's the only hope. He's the only one who upholds justice and cares for the poor. And just like this promised seed on page 3 of the Bible, Jesus would suffer the fate of the wounded warrior. He would be bitten by the serpent, but crush its head. And they battle it out. And once again, beauty is trampled. And justice is denied. We commemorate this on Good Friday. That was a time when Jesus was crucified, abandoned, deserted. His people, his followers, almost all, except for some beautiful, faithful women, fled and hid because they thought their fate was going to be the same. You know, a friend posted this on Facebook recently, and I just want to read it to you. It says, the very first Easter was not in a crowded worship space with singing and praising. On the very first Easter, the disciples were locked in their house. It was dangerous for them to come out. They were afraid. They wanted to believe the good news they heard from the women, that Jesus had risen, but it seemed too good to be true. They were living in a time of such despair and such fear. If they left their homes, their lives and their loved ones might be at risk. Does any of this sound familiar? Could a miracle really have happened? Could life really have won out over death? Could this time of terror and fear really be coming to an end? So alone in their homes, they dare to believe that hope was possible, that the long night was over and that morning had broken, that God's love was the most powerful of all, even though it didn't seem quite real yet. Eventually, they were able to leave their homes. When the fear and danger had subsided, they went around celebrating and spreading the good news that Jesus was risen and love was the most powerful force on earth. They go on to say, this year we might get to experience a taste of what First Easter was like, still in our homes, daring to believe that hope is on the horizon. And then after a while, when it's safe for all people, when it's the most loving choice, we'll come out. Lord, Lord, help us. Gathering together, singing and shouting the good news that God brings life even out of death. That love always has the final say. This person goes on to say, this year we might get the closest taste we've had yet to what the first Easter was like. So we have a beautiful moment in the resurrection. The promised seed is planted in the earth and up springs new life. You know, Jesus had told his disciples that his life and their life would need to be given up so that a new fruitful life could begin. Are you ready to give up? Jesus' resurrection is described as something called first fruits. First fruits, the first pick of the harvest. Hey, Dad, taste this pear. Our tree is amazing. It's going to be such a good year for pears, right? The first of the fruit, the guarantee of a greater harvest, the first portion of the crop that's brought in. But what Jesus happened for Jesus on Easter Day, what God did for him, he's going to do for all people at the end, raising them to a new bodily life. So that's what first fruits means. It doesn't mean that you're just, okay, I die and then I go to heaven. Like, well, where's your body? Your body's here on buried somewhere or scattered in around some stream or something like that, right? No, it's not just this disembodied party in heaven where we don't have. No. The point is that we are earthlings. We are embodied creatures. He means to recreate us, just like he's going to recreate the whole world. God has actually always intended for his dwelling place to be here with us. He's going to wipe every tear from our eyes. Our great hope is that that all of creation will be put back in right relationship with God. Everything, trees and frogs and mountains and volcanoes and the oceans, and that it would all be put back into right relationship with God, because all that has been broken and trampled. No more plague and famine and disease and hurricane and death and betrayal. The kind of world you were made for is the kind that only Jesus can bring, because he's there at the center of it. It's his work that brings you into the beauty and justice of God. And we find ourselves waiting and longing for a new creation. Oh, we want something. Why does all this have to happen? Do you feel yourself waiting? Let me share one more thing with you. Paul, one of the first people sent to reach other ethnicities outside of the Jewish populations, wrote this to a struggling group of Christians in the ancient Greek city of Corinth. If in Christ we have hope in this life only, if it's just about right here and right now, getting through this coronavirus and maybe having good feelings and being able to have a positive attitude and, God has a purpose in all this. And if that's all this is about, then we are to be pitied above everybody else, the most to be pitied. But in fact, Christ has been raised from the dead. The first fruits, there's that word again, the first fruits of those who have fallen asleep. For as by a man came death, that's Adam, by a man has come also resurrection of the dead. For as in Adam all die, so also in Christ shall all be made alive, but each in his own order. Christ first. He's the first fruits. And then at his coming, when he returns, part of the deal, he's coming back. And when he comes back, he's going to set into motion in full force the new creation, the transformation of everything that is and everyone that is into their eternal state. He is coming back. I can't encourage you enough to take that seriously. He is coming, and those who belong to Christ, they will be raised up as well. Then comes the end when he delivers the kingdom to God the Father after destroying every rule, every authority, every power. For he must reign until he has put all his enemies under his feet. And the last enemy to be destroyed is death. Justice will be done. And in the end, the last enemy to be destroyed is death. So Jesus is the first fruits. And then we are all going to share in that. We're going to share in his second coming. All people will be raised to share this new kind of life. For those who trust in Jesus, they will be raised from the dead for glory, to be with God. If you are avoiding him, if you're the one who says, not your will, but mine be done, he will give you what you want, which is your will to be separated from him for all eternity. But if you say, not my will, but yours be done, well, his will has been to live with you, to reign with you, to have you as a part of his family. You see how that works? Not my will, but yours be done. God says, okay, well, you know what my will is? My will is to live among you and wipe every tear from your eye and to hold you and to be the very center of your existence. And if you say, not your will, but mine be done, he says, okay, have it your way, which is isolation and separation from God for eternity. But this new life, new kind of life in the present time, or as Paul talks about it, the present evil age, we have an overlap here. This, the launch of new creation and the present evil age, and there's always a conflict here. So we're in the present evil age, the time of war and pandemic and refugees and poverty and all that. In the present age, we're in the overlap between the age to come, which is the new creation, and this present evil age. But it broke in and through Jesus, and it actually breaks into those who have given up their old life and embraced the resurrection life. Those are the resurrection moment. But here's the last question. Why doesn't God finish the job right away? Why doesn't he just stop and so the justice would come? Why can't he just make that new creation now? Because as Paul and others explain, God's rescue operation is an act of love. He doesn't just send in the tanks. He's unwilling to keep out those, some of you, who right now are feeling called to Jesus, being wooed and won by this good news of this kingdom message, this gospel. He's waiting for you. Will you say, not my will, but yours be done? Will you turn your life over to Jesus? Jesus is the only one that can save you from your rebellion. He's the only path to the Father. He is the way, the truth, and the life. He's the only one that can take you there. And you think you're waiting for God, but I want you to know Jesus is waiting for you. I'm going to pray for you in a moment. And if it's your heart to just reach out to Jesus and say, take me then, and just pray with me. But we're here to walk you through this decision as well. We want you to have your resurrection moment. We've prepared resources for you. We have people that want to connect with you. We care so much about you. In fact, we would encourage you, if it's your heart to, I want to follow Jesus, I need to take these next steps, just go to issaquah.cc/connect and jump in there and just fill out a quick form, and we will reach out to you. And we will, if we have to do Zoom calls or phone calls, we will help you learn how to follow Jesus. It is our heart that you understand how beautiful and amazing Jesus is and how he wants to transform your life. So help us help you by taking that quick step and just going there and making that connection with us. We'll add that in the links as well in the comment there. But we want you to have your resurrection moment. Hey, let me pray for you. Let me pray for you. So Jesus, there are many out there watching this that haven't had the resurrection moment. They have resisted you. They've thought you were a pretty decent person, and Jesus, they liked some of your teaching, but they haven't embraced you. And I just ask that you would welcome them right now, that you'd tap them on the shoulder and tell them that this is their moment to turn their lives over to you, to say to you, not my will, but yours be done. And if you're at home just saying, I need to make this decision right now, just say, Jesus, I receive you. Jesus, I take you. I want your life in me. I want to give up my life and receive your life. I want your resurrection life pouring through my veins. So just tell him that right now. And then tell us, and I want to encourage you that we will walk with you, and we care about you. We love you. So thank you so much for joining us this Easter. We're going to take a moment of communion now, and I want to encourage you. This is for those who love Jesus, who follow Jesus, who take his life into their life. His body and blood are the symbols, and those are what we take inside, because we want more than anything else to have his life pouring through us, his sacrifice for us.